If you like YouTube, you'll love YouTube Premium. Hi, I'm Sean Evans from Hot Ones, and I want to tell you about YouTube Premium. It has offline downloads, so you can watch without Wi-Fi. Background play, so you can lock your phone, and it still plays, baby. Oh, and it is completely ad-free. Yes, I said it, ad-free. Try YouTube Premium for 2 months free at youtube.com/premium. Trial eligibility varies. Terms apply. Cancel anytime.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Imagine driving on the highway one day and seeing a pink and purple minivan roll past you. There are hundreds and hundreds of butterflies painted across the hood, and a beautiful young woman's photograph is on the side panel. Then in bold letters, running down the length of the door, you read the following words: Caravan to catch a killer. You wonder what it's for. Seated at the wheel is an older woman with shaggy bangs and silver blonde hair. She is a mother, and her name is Dr. Maggie Zingman. Maggie has logged hundreds of thousands of miles, determined to get eyes on her daughter's case. Her daughter was a bright and funny 18-year-old college student when she was brutally murdered in her Tulsa apartment in the fall of 2004. Her killer remains at large. Today's perplexing episode is all about the murder of Brittany Phillips and her mother's hard advocacy efforts, Dr. Maggie Zingman. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Perplexity and Mystery Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Kadra. If you're new, hello and welcome. I tell tales every single week that have perplexed me, so if you love a good mystery that leaves you wanting more, don't worry, you're in the right place. And if you end up enjoying today's episode all about Brittany Phillips, I would love if you continue to follow along. If you are a returning listener, hello, my friends, and welcome back. I'm happy you're here today, and I'm super excited to be getting into this important episode with my friend Sierra from Unsolved Couple Pod.
Hi.
Hello. You want to introduce yourself? Tell everyone a little bit about yourself before we dive in?
Yeah, real quick. My name is Sierra. I'm actually brand new to this case as well. I heard about it for the first time at CrimeCon when you guys introduced me to Dr. Maggie, and I've been really excited to dive into this. It's been on my to-do list. But yeah, I'm kind of new into the world of true crime, so I'm really excited to hear you share the story with us.
Yeah, I'm excited to get into it. It's a very important, very upsetting story. And I also had the honor to talk to Dr. Maggie. And so I'll be splicing some of our interview into this episode. I also just like to tell people so they know I met Maggie at CrimeCon. She has her own booth and she is just working so hard to get answers for her daughter. She's also helping with some other families. We'll talk about that more towards the end of this episode. And it was just amazing. She gave me notes, a total timeline of Brittany's murder. And so I'm holding those up for people watching. And I just knew it was something that we needed to cover. A lot of big podcasts have talked about it. And Maggie really feels like podcasts are kind of the niche right now to hopefully help get the story out. She just really wants this thing solved. And I do feel like it's solvable.
Yeah, I'm really excited. And that's an awesome, like, archive of stuff that you have, because for anyone who tells stories like this, facts and timelines are so important, because you never know what's going to spark that memory for someone who's listening to this to remember something or to finally feel prompted to come forward and say something.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So I was very, very fortunate to get that from her. And we know that it's going to be, you know, more accurate coming from someone who is so close to Brittany and was there, and she's doing amazing things. So we will dive right in to this episode, and then we will talk more about Unsolved Couple podcast at the end. You guys should definitely check out their show. They do a great job over there. But for now, let's dive right into this story of Brittany Phillips. So Brittany Phillips was known to be fearless, outgoing, smart, and artistic. Her blonde ringlets and deep brown eyes brought people in. She enjoyed dancing, gymnastics, and modeling when she was growing up. Brittany's parents were divorced, with her father living in St. Petersburg, Florida, and her mom, Maggie, living in Oklahoma. Brittany also grew up with a brother named Josh. She was a really good student. She had a lot of interest in science, specifically biology, chemistry, and she was really, really smart. She graduated high school a year early. She was trying to figure out what she wanted to do for a career. And basically what happened was she lost her grandmother to cancer. And because of that, the way Maggie explained it in our interview, she felt compelled to go into cancer research.
Can you imagine also being like, oh, I'm super good, or I like studying science?
Right.
I feel like gold right there. Like, okay, already she's an amazing human being at that age to be like, I, one, am super smart. I'm good at this and I'm impacted and I want to change what's around me and for the good. To be able to have that forefront at that age is something, I mean, I think most of us, I was worried that my eyeliner matched on each side, not how could I change the world for the better.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and I mean, I think it makes sense because her mom, Maggie, is a trauma psychologist. She goes into prisons and works with people and does amazing things. So, you know, she came from a very smart, driven woman as well. So apple didn't fall from far from the tree there. So she ended up getting a scholarship to Eckerd College in St. Petersburg, Florida, where her dad lived. So she was also really excited for that because she, I don't know all the details, of course, but she didn't get to see her dad a ton. They lived in Oklahoma, so she was excited to get to spend more time with him.
Mm-hmm.
So this all comes together. She's looking forward to a new chapter in her life. And I just kind of think about when I was this age, it was such an exciting time. Even when I was in community college and still living with my parents, it was like the whole world is in front of me and you're kind of overwhelmed with choice, but it's exciting. So in the August of 2003, Brittany left her home in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and she headed southeast to Florida on a full ride chemistry scholarship. Initially, she was really excited, but after she started living in another state for a while, reality started to sink in for Brittany. She was living away from everything she'd ever known. She's away from her friends, her mom, who was basically like her best friend, and she just started getting really homesick. She wasn't seeing her dad as much as she had hoped either. And so about a year into her being there, she flew home for Christmas and she told her mom that this wasn't working out. And she ended up flying back and moving to do community college classes in Oklahoma in May of 2004.
I think so many of us can relate to this that first time. Like, and you guys, so I graduated in 2003 as well. So her and I are exactly the same age. I don't think people realize there was cell phones, but they weren't like what we have today. I remember I moved and I had 500 minutes to my name to call anyone. And I'd moved out of state, same thing, and long distance phone calls. And so you had to wait. You weren't just a little disconnected from your home base. You were so far removed. So I think so many of us can understand that feeling of wanting to come back home. And good for her mom supporting her in that. A lot of parents, I think, would be like, pull yourself up by your bootstraps and get back there. And
right.
She was like, no, you need to come home. Then I support you in that.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm like a firm believer in go to whatever college you get into and save all the money that you can. So she ended up going to Tulsa Community College. And that was great for her because she was close to her mom. Her brother was also going to this same college. So it worked out well. She was also working during this time at Applebee's and Cheddar's. I'm not sure if she was a hostess or a server, but according to Brittany's mom, she did experience some harassment from some male patrons while she was working. So more than likely a server. And that plays into theories later.
Mm-hmm.
So just a few months after Brittany moves back home, she started living on her own. So she gets her own place in Oklahoma. And at this point, it's August. She got a one-bedroom apartment at a complex known at the time as Glen Eagles. So this place is still up and running, but now it's under a different name and I think different management also. So this was at 9407 East 65th Street. And Brittany was in one of the end units on the second floor, 3216. So Maggie says they picked this apartment out after doing extensive research. It was considered a safe location by all reports. And Brittany's new place was just about an hour from Maggie's house in Chandler, Oklahoma. So every other weekend, Brittany would go see her mom. And when she wasn't visiting her, they were pretty much in constant contact. And she's 18, so sometimes there's a couple days where she doesn't hear from her, whatever. But for the most part, they were talking pretty regularly.
Yeah, and I'm sure how many of us living on our own for the first time did a second or third story apartment because we were told that it's safer that way, right? I mean, like every apartment had to have, it can't be bottom floor.
Yeah,
and so
yeah.
You're seeing this pattern where these women are doing everything that they can to keep themselves safe from potential predators.
I didn't even think about that, but that's a very good point. It was in the end, so it's kind of tucked away in the back, and it's on that second floor. I live on the bottom floor. I'm like in the back of my complex, but I am on the bottom, and I'm constantly kind of worried, but it's like for a convenience thing for me. But yeah, the stairs do tend to be safer.
No, and I point this out to my husband because obviously him growing up in a man's world versus me growing up in a woman's perspective in the world. I asked him one time, like, what do you think about when you're walking to your car? Where do you think you park your car if you know you're going to come back and the lights are down? Like, where do you look for your apartment? All of these things. He's like, I don't know. He could not grasp the concept that as women, we legitimately plan our lives almost sometimes day by day or location by location to keep ourselves safe from most of the time, predatory men in that our victimology could be very basic and simple. And it's still like, we have to think about these things in our mind 24/7. I think that's really important for sometimes people to realize that this is an unforeseen weight on women. And then for something to still go wrong and feel like I did everything we could.
Right. Exactly. Because women aren't the problem. That's the thing. It
we're
doesn't
not.
Matter what we do.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. And I would think knowing Maggie and her background too, I'm sure she talked to Brittany about these things. And we do know that Brittany would regularly lock her door as well. So at this point, it's mid-September, just a few weeks before Brittany would be murdered. She went to visit one of her friends named Kim. Now, Kim was over in Padre Island, and this is 11 and a half hours away. But Kim was really going through a crisis, and Brittany ended up staying with her for 5 days. So Kim had been assaulted by an ex-boyfriend and was needing support. And we don't know a lot about this. We don't know who this person was, really any details there, but this was something that Brittany's mom brought up in the timeline. And I think it's relevant because it's possible, yes, it's 11 and a half hours, but it's possible this person maybe followed Brittany back. We don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
So she stays with her for 5 days, comes back to Oklahoma. And now we're going to go to Monday, September 27th, 2004. So on this day, it was a Monday, Brittany decided that she wasn't going to go to her night class because she hadn't been feeling well. She was having like some sinus issues. And so basically she just felt like she should rest. She was on campus during the day. We know this for sure because she was seen by her brother Josh in the cafeteria. They talked for a while. And then she ended up leaving with one of her friends named Lydia. Brittany and Lydia took Brittany's car. So I guess she just wanted a friend with her. And they went to the urgent care in central Tulsa at about 6 o'clock so that she could be seen, get medicine, get to feeling better. Around 8:30 p.m., Brittany called Maggie frustrated because she had been waiting at this urgent care for 2 hours and still had not been seen. So Maggie was like, if you can push through to the weekend and make it here, I'll help you find a doctor. Little did Brittany and Maggie know this would be their final conversation. Brittany then allegedly, this is where the timeline starts getting murky, dropped Lydia back off at her apartment near 51st and Memorial. And I did look this up. It's just a couple miles away. It's like a 5-minute drive. Then she went to Bank of America near her apartment at 71st and 169, which is another 5-minute drive, then back home. Investigators believe no one heard from Brittany after about 9:45 p.m., but it's not clear how this information was verified. We don't know for certain if she, we'll get into that in a second, but timeline gets tricky.
How do they, they have to have something that nailed that time down, but I'd be interested to hear what it is or how they came up with that magic number.
Right. Yeah, we'll talk about that more in a second. But even then, it's still kind of like, I don't know for sure how they did that. But basically, so this was a Monday night. Tuesday comes around and it seems like Brittany didn't go to class that day. But we don't know for sure because they weren't able to verify if attendance was taken because teachers weren't always strict about that. You know, some were, some were not. It does seem like her lack of attendance was verified on Wednesday, the 29th. So she definitely wasn't in classes on Wednesday.
Okay. But the last verified sighting we have of her is her with a physical person is with her friend.
Yeah, exactly. A little after leaving the urgent care, and it would have been maybe around like 0.830.
Okay, so evening on Monday, and now we're at Wednesday before we have verification that no one has seen her.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So for the next few days, Brittany's mom, Maggie, is trying to check in with her, but Brittany's not answering her phone. Initially, Maggie wasn't concerned because she knew Brittany had classes. She's 18. Sometimes a couple days goes by and they don't talk to each other. But by Tuesday, Maggie was leaving voicemails saying things like, "I know you're okay, but please call me." So on Thursday, September 30th, so at this point, it's been a couple of days, no one had heard from Brittany. And so Lydia, that friend that had been at the urgent care with her, stopped by Brittany's apartment after she got out of class. She found Brittany's lights were on and the window was open. So Lydia starts knocking. No one answers the door.
Did she have air conditioning?
Do you know? I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah, I'd be interested. And at that time, luxury, you would have had air conditioning.
Right.
In probably some places. But I would be interested to see if that was a common habit of hers to leave a window open in the summertime.
Yeah. I mean, it being Oklahoma, it gets really hot and this would be, the summer. So I would be surprised if they did not have some type of at least like box unit. But yeah, that's a good point because if the window's open, then, you know, did she normally leave her window open or is that how someone got in?
Yeah, exactly. And then why did Lydia go over and check? Was she concerned because she hadn't gotten a hold of her or had Maggie gotten in touch with her friend to see if she could stop by?
I don't even think Maggie's like alarm bells were going off at this point, but because Lydia hadn't heard from her for a few days and it seems like they were pretty close friends, I think she just went unprompted to go.
Yeah, last she knew she was sick. So she's probably like, my friend's probably on the floor miserable. I can stop by and see if she needs anything. Okay.
Right.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
So she's knocking, nobody's answering. So it's her best friend. So she jiggles the doorknob and she finds that the door is unlocked. Not normal for Brittany. So Lydia felt like something wasn't right and she's scared. She doesn't want to go in the apartment. So she ended up calling her dad, who was actually a former district attorney in North County. So Lydia's dad basically says, if you want my advice, you should call the Tulsa police to do a welfare check. So that's what Lydia did. And police would arrive at this point. It is just shy of 10 p.m. They would find Brittany inside, deceased, at 9:59. Around 1 a.m., a Lincoln County sheriff officer knocked on Maggie's door at her home in Chandler. The sheriff asked, "Are you Maggie Zingman?" And she said, "Yeah, I am. You know, what's going on?" He handed her a paper and said, "You need to call this detective. Your daughter's been murdered." And then he left. So that's how Maggie found out that her daughter had been murdered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm always like, why did you take an oath to be in law enforcement if you cannot, at the very basic, have human decency to treat other people the way you would want yourself or your mother or your sister or your loved one to be treated?
What
a terrible thing.
And that's the way that Maggie described it. And she's talked about it in multiple interviews. So clearly it scarred her and stayed with her. It seems like this was not a great way, you know, to deliver this news. It's extremely unexpected. And so now she's in panic mode because she's an hour away from where Brittany's apartment is. So of course she starts rushing over there, trying to figure out what's going on, calling people. So let's flash over to the scene. So Brittany was found on the floor. They confirmed it was Brittany with her driver's license. Her pants were lying next to her. The police believed there was evidence of a struggle in the bedroom. And based on marks on the wall, they believed the attacker had flung Brittany against the wall. The apartment was also in disarray. It may have been ransacked, but Maggie also later said when she looked at it, it just seemed like her messy daughter. The apartment had four windows, and all the window screens had been removed and were found inside of the apartment.
Ever thought about Botox but worry you'll look, well, overdone? You're not alone. That's exactly why so many people choose Caps. Their approach is all about keeping your expression natural because Botox shouldn't freeze your face. It should refresh it. At Caps, treatments are performed by licensed nurses known for precise and subtle refined enhancements, all overseen by nationally ranked plastic surgeons. Now's the perfect time to start Botox. Book your first appointment and receive a $50 Caps MedSpa gift card. Schedule today at experiencecaps.com. Caps, where confidence begins.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
So it's kind of a weird detail, but I wanted to bring it up. So it's like, was she cleaning them? Like, I don't know why all the screens would be removed.
If Maggie, acknowledged that her daughter is messy. Like, okay, fair. You came into my house on an unannounced visit, you're going to think the same thing from time to time. Cleaning your screens, especially in an apartment, you don't own these screens. That is like an OCD level of clean. I cannot think of any way, shape, or form why someone would do that.
Right. I've never done that. And I feel like I'm a pretty clean person. The only other thing that I was wondering, because it's all four of the screens, I don't think this is something like an intruder would have done, is maybe there was some type of maintenance or work order going on. And so they were replacing them. We don't know. Yeah. And if they were replacing them, if something had been damaged, could that have been an entry point? Just a question mark there.
Yeah. Is this a one bedroom or a studio?
They just said one bedroom.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good question. I don't know if it's a studio, because if it's a studio, then more open concept. Mm-hmm. There's not necessarily a door. Now, so Maggie did mention when we were talking, there was some type of like French door in the apartment. And when Maggie, because she did end up getting to the apartment and like looking around and stuff when she was cleared to go in, when Maggie looked at these French doors, she did say it seemed like the top had been kind of damaged, but she wasn't sure if it had been like that before. It wasn't like obviously broken or something. And she
but almost like someone tried to like slam it shut. Like maybe she was trained to guard herself in that room.
Maybe. She also told me when we were talking that there was a time that there was this guy who was friends with Brittany, and Brittany had basically gotten locked out of the apartment, and the guy was able to get into the apartment using the French doors, is my understanding. Right. And they did end up looking at him later as a suspect. They looked at a lot of suspects.
In the bedroom, there were French doors. The French doors back then, they weren't that lockable. And I know they weren't that lockable because they were very flimsy. And Brittany once told me, I call her Brittany, she once told me that she locked herself out of the apartment, and so she had to get a 6'2" friend, which of course we looked at as a suspect, to hike himself up on that porch and jimmy the door to get in. When I was cleaning up her apartment, I remember sitting out on the patio and looking at the doors, and had little wood lattices that are crisscrossed, and thinking the ones on one side looked a little bit bowed, and I thought, were they always bowed? I'll have to ask Brittany. And it was one of the first times that I went, I can't ask her.
But yeah, the entryway, police were never able to determine like how the killer got in.
This person got in. But it does not appear that she was either expecting company or that maybe she willingly let someone in, like we've seen in other cases where maybe there was two glasses on the counter, or it appears that there was a social visit or she opened the door and let someone in willingly. It seemed more like it was a little bit chaotic, possibly, mm-hmm. like with the open window and stuff like that. It right. seems, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if she wasn't feeling good, I doubt she was expecting someone. And then we also mm-hmm. know from cell phone pings that she wasn't calling anybody. I don't know okay. if they looked at like the text messages or things like that, but you know, she wasn't calling anyone. It doesn't seem like she was expecting anybody. Semen and blood from an unknown person were found at the scene, with the semen being found in Brittany's bed sheets, and a small amount of blood, we're talking a drop of blood, was found on a small hallway wall or the bedroom wall, depending on the sources you read. It was later determined the semen and blood were from the same person. Okay. So what would you be thinking at this point?
What was her manner of death?
So we haven't talked about that yet, but okay. So with what you have so far, like her pants are found, mm-hmm. next to her. She's partially clothed. There's semen in the bed. There's a small drop of blood outside. It's from the same person. What would you be thinking?
That she was sexually assaulted and possibly fought back. So he maybe had a scratch. Maybe, you know, she grabbed him or, you know, or did something. That would be my conclusion.
Right, exactly. Something like really common that we would think.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that seems to be what led police to ultimately have tunnel vision. They really locked in on this semen being in the bed, this one drop of blood being in the bed. They're from the same person, must be from the killer, which, again, very logical thing. I would think that as well. I also first thought that when I was reading through these notes, it was like, oh my God, how have they not caught this person? But you have to look at every possibility. And it seems like
you cannot eliminate things until you've eliminated them, which yeah. means there's a world where she had an intimate partner that she was consensually sleeping with, and there just happened, I mean, she is living on her own. She's allowed to have, you know, partners come over and spend time with her.
Right.
And so I'm sourcing that DNA is going to be important to find out from that person if this was a relationship or was this not, but to get mm-hmm. tunnel vision that it was only one or the other without any other piece of evidence to eliminate A or B, you have to keep them all open.
Exactly. Unfortunately, there were no cameras at the complex either, except for one. And this camera erased every 24 hours. And she was found, you know, days later. So it doesn't seem like they could get anything. I don't know. I would hope that they checked this camera footage, but that was something that was mentioned as well. So Maggie's obviously beside herself. I can't imagine going through something like this. And when she gets to the scene, she finds that Brittany's body has already been sent to the medical examiner. So it's only been a couple hours at this point since she was initially found. So I feel like that's a little fast.
Yeah, you would. Preserving evidence at the scene would be super important, including photographs. Did they take pictures of the scene and all of that? That seems really rushed to get the body out of the house.
Mm-hmm.
Was that standard protocol on their part?
Right. Again, like things that I'm questioning. I know that they did take swabs from Brittany's body and like collected forensics from the scene, but it does just seem like they got her out kind of fast. So just a couple hours. And other thing that I thought was really weird, this could be totally nothing, but it is concerning and something that the apartments, I hope they fixed. So there was a shared attic space in the unit that multiple units could have access to, as well as maintenance people and other apartment personnel and construction workers. One of the entry points to this attic space was directly above Brittany's closet. It was not securely locked, which could theoretically allow people to enter as many as 7 units, including Brittany's. Now, police did go up there and look, and they said there was no evidence of anyone having been up there, but that could potentially be an entry point.
Have you ever watched any of the true crime, I guess they're TV shows, about frogging?
Yes. I've done two episodes on frogging as well.
It's terrifying to think that, and not even to disclose that to, you see a young girl moving into your apartment complex as the manager, and you can't say, hey, by the way, you might want to put a board over that or something. How terrifying.
Because yeah.
Then there's going to be no evidence that anyone was in or out, because how do you track that?
Maggie told me the story about how she found out about this attic space, and it was very chilling the way she explained it. So she basically was saying that she was walking around the apartment with the lead detective, and the lead detective brought her into Brittany's closet, and he goes, have you seen this? And she was like, seen what? And he points up, and all he did was like push the top of the closet. And it's basically just this small space, but something that a person could easily get through. And it was just open.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it, again, it led to other units. So, you know, we have to look at maintenance workers, construction workers, other people who lived in the building.
What if there had been a maintenance worker and they're replacing screens?
Right. Exactly.
And they know about this.
Mm-hmm.
It makes you wonder. And no one from the apartment complex, were they ever interviewed to find out why, maybe if they had, if any maintenance, because everything's, from my understanding, in apartments has to be filed with paperwork because it comes out of some sort of expense or mm-hmm. a work order. Do we know if the police ever looked into work orders or anything like that around her apartment complex?
That's a good point.
Or her unit specifically?
Work orders, I don't know. That's mm-hmm. a good point. And I know that Maggie's going to listen to this too. So Maggie, let us know. I know that they interviewed a ton of people, including apartment personnel, maintenance people, mm-hmm. Other tenants, stuff like that.
Jeff was asking me questions about the apartment, and then he went into the closet, which was typical Brittany messy. And he said, you know, does this look like somebody's been through here? And I said, I don't know, but she's always messy. And so after that, he said, were you aware of this? And he points up. And I go, what? And then he, because he's so tall, lifts up and can pull himself up into there. And when he went up in there, and I was able to look briefly, but a young kid who was part of a criminal justice class actually went up there and I think took some pictures. But from what I remember is right then in 04, that shared attic space didn't have blocks between the four apartments. So you have two apartments in the front and two apartments in the back. Brittany was in the back, but all four of those apartments had the square in the closet to get up in there. So that means public service, wire layers, telephone, because 04, you know, not everybody had the cell phones yet. And then two, if you look at the outside of the building, both front and back, both of them had steps that went up like this. Then they went around a curve, and then they went up to the second. You could stand on the railing of those steps going up to the upper apartments and hike yourself up on the attic. And I'm pretty sure there was some access up there.
So the apartments are still there.
Yes, but they were able to go in and look around. And I'm not sure, but I think they saw in that one that now there are barriers up in between. But as far as I know, there weren't back then. And even if they were, people could have climbed over them. So I know they looked for evidence because one of the ideas was he could have been waiting for her.
So let's go to the medical examiner's report and talk a little bit more about the cause of death and things like that. So Dr. Sibley was the medical examiner. Dr. Sibley did go to the scene as well to look at Brittany before they brought her out. So Dr. Sibley mentioned in their report that Brittany's bedroom door, which led to an outdoor balcony, was open, but it's not clear if this was because the police had opened it to like air things out or if it was found that way. A used dried tampon was also found near Brittany's body. Her face was congested and purple. There were numerous towels on her. Rigor mortis was minimal. She had mild decomposition, and abrasions were found on her neck, indicative of strangulation. There were signs of sexual assault, and the cause of death was either strangulation or suffocation. Hemorrhaging was found around her eyes. The lack of ligature marks and her hyoid bone being intact made it most likely that she had been suffocated with either a pillow or with a hand over her face. Her toxicology report was clean.
Was she on her cycle or her period at the time of her death?
I don't know. I would think because of the dried tampon being found next to her, but that's all I know about
that.
Girls
don't take their tampons out in their bedrooms and throw them to the side. But
no.
That seems to me like a possibility where an angry person who was maybe planning on sexually assaulting somebody, mm-hmm. because we've heard it from other, I can't think of the guy off the top of my head, but he was convicted of assaulting many women, and he ended up brutally like murdering the women that he found out were on their periods when he went to assault them because he was disgusted with them because they were on their periods, and mm-hmm. it like ruined it for him. So then it was, of course, their fault. And I wonder if there is a world where the end of that string could be looked at or tested for any sort of, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry, I dropped my phone, trace DNA or anything at all like that, because women do not discard their tampons that way.
Right. Yeah. There were some sources. I can't remember where I was reading this, but it might have just been some online theories where someone was like, could the tampon have just like fallen out? And I was like, what? No.
No.
They don't just do
that. Not how anatomy works.
Yes. Right.
No kidding.
Yeah. No, exactly. I feel like what makes the most sense is the killer removed it, or mm-hmm. it fell out of the trash somehow if it was in like a total disarray from like a struggle. Those are the two mm-hmm. scenarios that make the most sense to me. But there were several glaring issues with Dr. Sibley's report. There was no mention of Brittany's body temperature, and it was noted that the food that Brittany had eaten looked recently digested. So one of the other things I've been researching this week, and it's not the most accurate scientific method, but one of the ways that they'll help determine cause of death is through body temperature and food digestion. And with the food mm-hmm. digestion, the general consensus is if something looks like it's been recently digested, we're talking she died within like a few hours. So they found her
early Friday morning. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So this is where timeline gets really confusing, because we're saying her last sighting was Monday. We find her Thursday, and she's not apparently talking to people or being seen Tuesday, Wednesday, but she wasn't killed possibly until Thursday. But Dr. Sibley made a different determination. So there's a lot of confusion of like, when did this happen? 70 swabs had been collected from Brittany's body, including underneath her fingernails, which we're going to talk more about later. According to the lead detective, all these swabs were collected and analyzed, but those swabs were not mentioned in the medical examiner's report. So that was another issue that they found with Dr. Sibley's report. Maggie was also told her daughter was raped before she was killed, but Dr. Sibley's report makes no mention of a rape kit being done.
Yeah, because there was semen found on the bed, but did they do a vaginal swab?
Exactly. We don't know. How was that cause of...
Yeah, how can you note sexual assault and not mm-hmm. do a swab?
Part of what's really difficult about this is that and I'm just going to put it in the words that Maggie put it in, the police chief, the prime detective that she was working really close with, he no longer works there. Mm-hmm. The Tulsa PD is now under a new chief, and that chief is not talking to Maggie, and they are not open to having other cold case units look at Brittany's case. They don't want outsider help. So we don't know a lot of things, in my opinion, because Maggie doesn't have a lot of information because she's getting stonewalled. Yeah.
When my best detective, Jeff Felton, left, he's not been allowed access back to the files. He can answer a lot of questions, and I still communicate with him every month. They won't allow any of the old retired detectives or the retired heads of homicide to go back and review the case file. They won't allow anybody like the sheriff, who was my detective for 1 year before he became head sheriff, they won't allow his cold case task force to review the file. So some of these descriptions may be a little bit off, because we can't get back to access to the files. And the current cold case detective is not allowed to answer my questions specifically. They're starting to a little bit now because we know some national people are asking them questions. I write them every month. And I was told about 5 years ago, I was told, if you don't write us so often, if you write us short emails, we'll respond to you. So I stopped writing so often. And so every month I ask the same question. And for 6 to 7 months, I don't get an answer. And then we do a news story. Why won't you all respond? Then they respond. And then they won't respond for another 6 to 8 months. And I can't keep playing this information game. When we ask them why they won't, they just go, oh, families just find it hard to understand criminal justice. And I have to always say, I've been studying criminal justice for 22 years. Plus, I was taught by some of the best in the field the first 12 years.
Yeah. Well, and if the detective or the chief of police listens to this, my personal opinion is can I cuss on this?
Yes, you can cuss on this podcast.
Get the fuck over yourself.
Right.
It's not about you.
Exactly.
This does not make you any less of a man or any less of a measuring contest you want to have because you want to mark your territory like a dog.
Yeah,
you
what's
are a
the
human
harm?
Being. What is the harm in letting somebody else? I always go back to lately with the Brian Koberger case in the Idaho 4, a little tiny town in Idaho. The very first thing the chief of police said is, we need help. Mm-hmm. Why not reach out to other units or the federal level? Because there's money and resources there and time. And I get that local law enforcement are so inundated and overloaded that they don't have time to dedicate hours and hours to cases, especially cold ones. So why not do the right thing? It makes you a bigger man. It makes you a better person. Get the fuck over yourself.
Yes, I couldn't agree more.
So, I get fired up over that stuff. Sorry.
No, you're good.
When it comes to plastic surgery, expertise matters, and CAPS sets the standard. Our team includes 7 nationally ranked board-certified plastic surgeons. From tummy tucks, breast augmentation, and liposuction to facelifts and beyond, every surgical plan is tailored to your body, goals, and recovery timeline. CAPS is trusted for consistent, visible outcomes. Plus, when you book your surgical consultation, you'll receive a $100 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Expert care, exceptional results. Visit experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step 1, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step 2, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step 3, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step 4, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
So the time of death, according to Dr. Sibley, was estimated to be somewhere between 9 p.m. on the 27th and 8:30 a.m. on the 28th. So the 27th was the Monday. 8:30 a.m. is the Tuesday. So
okay.
That would mean at the latest, 2 days had gone by mm-hmm. before she had been found. And again, this is not based on body temperature or, you know, she has mild rigor mortis, partially digested food. They based Brittany's time of death on her cell phone ping, the last contact with her loved ones. That's my understanding.
That has nothing to do with her activity.
Right.
I mean, her being alive, whether or not her phone ping, she was at home.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's part of the problem is there wasn't a good medical examiner report, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Timeline is not clearly established. And police, again, in my opinion, got tunnel vision on this DNA thing with the semen and the blood. Mm-hmm. Investigators obviously are having trouble building this case because there's not a clear timeline. And so for a long time, investigators really thought that they could solve this thing with the DNA recovered from the scene. This is the kind of clue that would solve a case on TV in like 45 minutes. But the DNA recovered in Brittany's apartment took Tulsa PD down a road that lasted decades and ultimately led nowhere. By 2012, Detective Jeff Felton, the lead detective that has been working on this the whole time, the one who was talking to and helping Maggie, mm-hmm. Jeff ended up looking at about 2,000 suspects.
Holy crud. Well, yeah, when you don't have a time to even like establish it's such a big window in the world of true crime or in the world of a crime being committed. Yeah, your suspect list is going to be huge.
Yeah. So obviously they were working really hard at this point. They were trying, you know, to look at 2,000 suspects. It's not fair to say they weren't doing anything. They were working very, very hard. It's just, I feel like they made a mistake with this whole DNA thing.
To kick the can down the road by being like, well, when the DNA comes in, then we'll know. So they were able to kind of like, does that make sense? I could totally see where it's like, well, yeah, the crock pot's going off. The timer's going to, like, we'll get to that later. Right. And then we'll know. And so we don't have to invest a ton of time into it up front.
They did also find there were 276 sex offenders living in or near the apartment complex. And keep in mind, they had seen from reports that this was a safe place for her to be. So that makes me question the validity of these reports. And that's a lot of sex offenders.
Yeah.
So they entered this DNA that they had recovered from the scene, the semen and blood DNA, into CODIS. And they were using this DNA and comparing it to these 2,000 suspects. Does it match? Yes or no? If it doesn't match, it's not our guy. If it doesn't match, it's not our guy. That's how they did it every time. So, of course, every single DNA comparison came back negative, hence how they ended up with 2,000 suspects. And now we're going to flash all the way forward to 2019. So with new developments in DNA technology, investigators got another idea. What if they tried out forensic genetic genealogy in Brittany's murder? The same kind of technology that has cracked major cases like the Golden State Killer. This type of testing generates a composite sketch from the crime scene DNA using phenotype, or a computer-generated image. So they're able to use genetic makeup to get a good idea of what the killer physically looks like. And then they can take that and put a sketch out into the media, see if they can find a match.
And this is different than like what we've seen with genetic, like typing like through trying to figure out, oh, it's a cousin or a father or somebody within a genetic tree, correct? This is two different things, right?
Yeah, phenotype is just more so like, okay, based on this genetic makeup, there's a 98% chance that this person is European descent. There's this many percent chance that their chin looks like this and their eye color is like this. Okay. So that's what they're doing now.
Okay.
So ultimately, this phenotype testing generated an image and police were able to create a composite sketch and start putting it out into the media. The sketch was that of a Caucasian male with light colored hair, most likely blonde, and of Northern European ancestry with either blue or green eyes. Police also hoped that this could narrow down their list of suspects. And Maggie was so certain that this was, you know, good and accurate, understandably, that she put this sketch on her car at one point, the Caravan. And so she was driving everywhere with this sketch on it, and people were calling her, giving her tips. This is who people were looking for. Ultimately, they land on one man matching this profile, a man who knew Brittany Phillips personally. This man had been dating Brittany's friend back in 2004. We don't know which friend this was. At first, I kind of wondered if it was Lydia, but they don't make it clear. So I don't know for sure. We just know that he was dating one of Brittany's friends in this area, and he lived out of town.
Okay. And it wasn't the friend who had been that had been assaulted by her boyfriend that she went to go visit?
It doesn't seem that way. But again, like, I don't know for sure. So basically, or this girl also might have lived out of town. We know that he for sure lived out of town. But he was dating one of Brittany's friends. And when he was questioned by police, he put himself in Brittany's apartment. He claimed he and his girlfriend had come into town and stayed in her bedroom while Brittany slept on the couch. And he and his girlfriend had sex on Brittany's bed, which is how his semen ended up there. His blood and semen did match. They confirmed it. The DNA that was found at the scene. So initially when I heard this story, I was skeptical. I was like, you know, how convenient, you're putting yourself there, But then I'm thinking back to like when I was 18 and I would have random friends come crash with me all the time. And you're 18. I'm sorry, you have
what do you
sex
think's gonna happen?
You can. Yeah. What do you, so they had sex In her room. That's why it was there. There's one drop of blood. And according to police, he had an airtight alibi. Now, keep in mind, this is 14 years later. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Like,
how
I wouldn't remember
that. How do you have an airtight alibi 14 years later?
Well, and how do you have an airtight alibi when we don't know the specific timeline of when she was killed? Was she killed on the 27th, the 28th, the 29th? So when were you there? And again, that's also really hard to remember 14 years later.
Yeah. I wonder if the potential ex-girlfriend could at least verify that at some point her and her boyfriend had hooked up in her friend's bed.
Right. Because you'd probably at least remember that.
Yeah.
The specifics of this man's alibi have never been made public, hence why we don't know who this person is.
Yeah. All that time gone for nothing.
He was ruled out.
I was on my, 15th, 16th tour in Washington State, and I got a call from the detective, then the second detective, Eddie Majors. And he said, Cece Moore made a direct match, not a brother, like sometimes they find, not an uncle. She identified whose DNA that was, meaning it could not be anybody else's, only this one person. Mm. And then his second word stabbed me in the heart. He said, and he's not our killer. And I went, what? And I said, how could that be? And he said, oh, he has an airtight alibi. And I said, what is that? And he said, I can't tell you.
So this leads us to another twist. So flashing forward about another 4 years, so very recently, we're at 2023 now, Maggie received shocking news from her ex-husband, the one who lived in Florida. So way back in 2004, the year Brittany was murdered, Brittany's father received a letter from Brittany in the mail. This letter was time-stamped for September 29th, 2004, and it was in Brittany's handwriting. This would directly contradict Brittany's supposed time of death, according to Dr. Sibley. This would be at least one day, if not two, after they're thinking she was dead.
Mm-hmm.
So Brittany had mailed a birthday card for her grandfather, but she couldn't remember his address, so she mailed it to her dad first to forward along. And the way that this timestamping worked is it was timestamped via a kiosk. So you would buy a stamp and the machine would print the stamp with a date, time, and origin. So we know for sure whoever mailed this out, whether it was her or the killer or a friend, it went out on the 29th.
And so, you didn't tell anybody about this?
Right.
Because where was this kiosk? Like, where did she mail it from? Where did she purchase the stamp from? Like, that was, that could have had CCTV or some sort of surveillance system or something along those lines. Or at bare minimum, hey, you sold a stamp to a young girl. Do you remember what time she came in? Or was there a young girl? Or was it a guy? Or was it this?
Exactly. And the problem now is it's 2023.
It's too late. Yeah.
This was 2004. So Maggie, as soon as she gets this information, turns it over to the police, turns the card, turns the stamp over, and police collected it as evidence. Maggie has heard nothing about this since.
Was the stamp licked? Was the envelope licked?
Great questions. They're under that new chief now, and so we don't know. You also have to question who mailed this letter. Was it Brittany shortly before her murder, or was it someone else? So now, not only has it been more than 20 years since 18-year-old Brittany Phillips was murdered, but police are back to square one. They have no suspect. They have no clear time of death. And for Maggie, she said this news was like Brittany had died all over again.
All over again. Yeah.
Additionally, if this DNA sample police had been using ruled out this one man, this means police have been cross-comparing with the wrong DNA sample this entire time. They have ruled out thousands of suspects, quote unquote, for the last two decades, but they've ruled them out using the wrong DNA.
Yeah, they ruled them out on something that doesn't matter.
So now they have to theoretically look at all of these people again.
Which is where a cold case detective who specializes at starting at the very beginning. How many times have we been told by cold case detectives, you go back like you're there day one, chronologically through whatever evidence is left, because you never know what is important now that maybe didn't get flagged as important then, what got missed. Everyone makes mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And to not allow a quote, someone that specializes in working in reverse is asinine, frankly, and irresponsible. Yeah.
So what they're saying is, guess what? That phenotype sketch is still valid. We just got a bad tip from it. Versus CC Moore made a direct match to that DNA. We went out and interrogated him, and he's not a killer. You're invalidating that phenotype sketch, but they've not done that, and they continue to do that. And a good example of the problem is somebody was sending me a tip 2 days ago, and they sent it in to TPD, and I did too. And I mentioned this problem to them. They said, oh, here, have you looked at this, and this person? Because they have very similar assault histories to Brittany's crime. And then their second statement was, but I'm not sure if they're all white. And from what I'm reading, the DNA says he's white.
Right. So it's limiting your suspects.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if they're continuing to say that the tip was a phenotype from the phenotype picture, they're saying that white, Caucasian, blue-eyed, blonde-haired, even though that can alter a bit, is still valid. They've never invalidated it. And from what insiders tell me, they haven't gone back over these because that's what killed me. What's killed me was the fact that when they said, and he's not our killer, me still being not that learned in DNA, knew that all the suspects that we had compared to blood and semen should have gone back to ground zero. They should have gone back. And every time I ask, have you gone back over those old suspects? They go, we don't need to. We already ruled them out. Well, did you rule them out with the first DNA or did you rule them out with other DNA? Because there's other samples. Even the detective was not aware that there was DNA underneath the nails.
Maggie also recently learned different DNA was found under Brittany's fingernails. And as far as we know, this was never tested until much more recently, and that testing is still ongoing. There's no clear leads. So that is what I mean by tunnel vision.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to Dr. Sibley's medical examiner report, it wasn't clear what type of testing was done to determine sexual assault. According to Maggie, when Dr. Sibley came on to work initially for Tulsa, they had previously been fired from their last job and were hired at Tulsa under restrictions. Dr. Sibley was later fired in Tulsa as well. And we don't know the details of why. This could be nothing, but I do think that's important to think about.
Yeah, I'd be interested because the female anatomy, if she was on her period, can look very different. Like he said sexual assault, but then didn't perform a rape kit. I mean, what was the determining factor of the assault other than the possibility that her pants were off?
Well, and maybe Dr. Sibley did perform a rape kit, but it wasn't documented. And what do we always say? If it wasn't documented, it didn't happen.
No, so, in my world of working in real estate, if it's not on paper, if it's not written down, it doesn't count.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Rainbows and wishes, people, like, do your job.
Exactly. Yeah, we're seeing that in the Lindsay Clancy case right now. If it wasn't documented, it didn't happen.
It doesn't count. Yep.
We don't know. We don't know if a rape kit was done or not. Maggie also asked investigators a number of times where the medical examiner's notes are and if a rape kit was actually done or not. No one seems to have that answer. Maggie would like for other cold case units to be allowed to look at Brittany's case and help. And she says Tulsa PD has been very resistant.
I cry every day.
Right.
I don't beat myself up about the losing, but I miss it when I go through a mountain or I go over a river or I see a rainbow or something because it reminds me of her and I miss her. But yeah, and in case some people, when they listen to these podcasts, they go, oh, they just don't understand and they just hate the police. No, I had the best team for the first 12 years. I still have police officers on the beat, on the road, in the cars, who stopped me. And sometimes I think I'm getting in trouble or something, but they just stopped me to tell me, we ran this DNA for Jeff. Or, you know, every time I hear about your case, my heart goes out. Or I used to work in evidence and I wanted to analyze things so much more and they wouldn't let us. So I'm not police bashing because I have met right there. And then the sheriff, the head sheriff. If it wasn't for him and his cold case task force, they all got my back. Cheryl McCollum, Mac. I've worked with so many criminal justice, retired FBIs. I've got so many people. So it's not understanding. And it's, I don't know how somebody can be in a job that requires such compassion and be so cruel. Because if that gets to another family, they could be devastated by it. It would be almost as bad as them telling a person that somebody's died by treating them that way. Not me. You do something to me, I'm going to start standing up for every other victim.
As for other leads and potential suspects, two other suspects police looked at were brothers who lived nearby that had expressed interest in Brittany. That is all I know about them.
Okay.
Another one, I thought this was interesting, was a security guard at the apartment complex who Brittany went on one single date with. Brittany ended up blocking this person from her phone and email. And he refused to give a DNA sample. Interesting.
Interesting.
Police did get a warrant to do a buccal swab from him, but DNA ruled him out. But this was with the semen and blood DNA, so no, it didn't.
So it didn't rule him out, yeah.
Exactly. So we don't know. Maybe they can test his DNA with that fingernail DNA.
Yeah.
The apartment complex still stands, but is now under a different name. I hope they fixed that shared attic bullshit. And I did look up some reviews online just to see if I could find anything concerning. I did not, so that's good. As far as like safety stuff. Brittany was buried on October 4th, 2004, on what would have been her 19th birthday. Dr. Maggie is still left with no answers, but she has turned her pain into purpose. She is doing amazing things. She works on advocacy for legal reform, for DNA laws, and 3 years after her daughter's murder is when she started Caravan to Catch a Killer. She got a van wrapped with her daughter's photo in her favorite colors, pink and purple, and her favorite butterflies, to spread awareness of her daughter's unsolved murder from state to state. And when we talked about this on the interview, I thought it was really cool. She said that she found this guy who has been wrapping cars for years and learned about her story and was like, I will wrap your car for free. And anytime you need another car wrapped, I'll do it again. And so she's been working with him this entire time.
Good for him. Yeah. See, police, chief, that's how you do it. You just do the right thing and you're the good person and then you get to be the hero.
As of 2025, Maggie has completed roughly 25 caravans and driven through 48 states. The most recent one that she did that she was telling me about is on Route 66. In the last decade, her trips have started to focus more and more on other cold cases. She's helping families get their stories out in front of the media. She also teaches them about DNA laws, victims' resources, and just shows up so that they're not alone. It's been nearly 22 years, and Brittany Phillips' case remains open. According to Maggie, investigators have more DNA that they have collected from Brittany's body and the scene that they could work with, but it still has not been tested. The DNA, again, found under Brittany's fingernails is still being tested. So I'm hoping that they'll continue to do that, but it's been such a long time. I can't imagine waiting that long for answers.
No, especially when it's sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not going to use it, then turn it over to somebody who will.
So here is what Maggie is asking for and what you guys can do to help. She wants her daughter's story to make it to national news. It has made local news. It has never made national news. And Maggie feels like that is what we need to get more attention. Think about the big cases going on right now. Lindsay Clancy, Gabby Petito was another big one that went national. Oh my gosh, who's the older woman who's missing right now? Why am I forgetting her name? Nancy Guthrie. There we go. Nancy Guthrie. Her story went national.
That's in my hometown here where I live. Yeah, Nancy Guthrie.
Yeah, I went blank. So you guys, you know, the ones that you know them because they've made national news. So she feels like this could also give investigators that push to solve her murder, to get help from other cold case units. She essentially feels like the investigators right now in Tulsa have stonewalled her. They don't talk to her. They're under this new chief. She has no idea where they're at with the case. So she is asking for everyone to do two things, and they are very simple. Take 5 minutes to write your local news stations. All you have to do is say something like, have you heard about Maggie Zingman, the woman who's driving all over the U.S. in her van, Caravan to Catch a Killer? She's bringing awareness to her daughter's unsolved cold case while helping other families. Tell 5 friends to do the same thing. Then those 5 friends. Tell them to tell 5 friends, and so on. This is called the spider effect. I want to ask you, what do you want to leave the people with that are listening to this? Do you have any particular calls to action or things you want people to remember, your message, if you will?
Yeah, I guess I have 2 main things. One is when Nancy Guthrie was all over the media, I had a lot of missing cold case families call me and say, God, this is just hurting my heart. I wish we had gotten such coverage and stuff. I try to explain the idea of why media does these more well-known stories. But what I started doing, and a number of people started doing, is talking to our own local media and saying, can you please publish this story? And what we said is that if you're feeling just heartbroken for Nancy Guthrie and her family, and or the Idaho murders or Gabby's family, and you feel powerless, what you need to do is turn around, look in your own city, because hidden in the shadows are all these missing and cold case families. And that compassion that you have towards these national families, turn it local. Reach out, say, can I do anything for you? Can I be there to just listen to you vent? Can I help hand out flyers? Do you want me to help you organize an event? Can I share your story on Facebook? It can be something so little, but so many families are feeling alone and isolated. That's part of my mission for these Caravan to Catch a Killer. I try to reach out to families like in St. Louis. None of these families knew each other. They knew of each other. They knew the stories. But after they all met, they now are going to have a monthly or every other month meeting. They now have a network. So that's what you can do. So if you're not a part of a missing or cold case family, but you're involved because of true crime, reach out to the families, because that is so powerful. That's the one thing. And then I can beg. So I'm 71. I've done 350,000 miles through 48 states on 25 Caravan to Catch a Killer tours. I'm not sure how many more I can do. The odd thing is I've never got national coverage. So we've got to get this story out on national news. Here's an easy way to do it. 3 or 4 sentences. Are you aware of the mom who has traveled 350,000 miles through 48 states on 25 tours, originally to solve her daughter's murder, but after 10 years, learned of thousands of cold case families with stories untold? And so now she reaches out to families to help them have advocacy. But it's not just reaching out. It's called the spider effect. So if you can go on Facebook, Instagram, you can find NBC, CBS, CNN, Fox, MS Now. You can find all of them on Instagram or on Facebook. You can find their emails, send snail mails. But when you do that, ask 5 of your friends to do that. Tell them to ask 5 of their friends, and tell them to ask 5 of their friends, because the only time I ever got on almost national news, I asked them. I was so shocked that they called me. I said, so why did you call me? She said, it was the first time we had 26 people contact us who weren't associated with the story, but were telling us about the story. And so whether it's my story, which I hope you will, because I want to get this out to all the families, or somebody else's story, the more people you can get, that's why Gabby's story, that's why the Idaho murders, that's why Nancy Guthrie, that's all those stories go, because they know millions are interested. We may not have millions, but we can get a good 20, 30, or 40 and stuff. So that's my beg.
Maggie believes this is what we need to get Brittany and her loved ones some semblance of closure. So I'm going to put a little snippet in the show notes if you guys need an idea of what to write. And I will also put the homicide tip line, the email for homicide, and the Crime Stoppers. So the homicide tip line is 918-798-8477. The email is cityoftulsa.org. Crime Stoppers, if you want to be anonymous, is 918-596-COPS. And that is the story of the unsolved murder of Brittany Phillips and the work that her mother Maggie is doing.
Hey, let's talk about something a lot of us deal with: thinning hair or hair loss. If that sounds familiar, CAPS has solutions. Their hair restoration treatments are personalized, designed to strengthen your existing hair, encourage regrowth, and improve scalp health. The providers at CAPS guide you every step of the way with advanced treatments for noticeable, long-lasting results. And when you book your first hair restoration appointment, you'll get a $50 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Book today at experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
By law, 21 plus terms and conditions apply.
Yeah, awesome. That this poor mother. The other thing that I actually thought of is one thing that people pay attention to because eyes are on it. If everyone listening to this and so on and so forth simply got on either Instagram, X, TikTok, Facebook, whatever your social media of choice is, and made a comment about why this hasn't been solved or when is the DNA going to be tested, some sort of hook that people will pay attention to. Why have we let, you know, a cold case go on for this long? This woman deserves justice. And you tag the city and the police and anyone, if you can get the chiefs, you know, that it gets paid attention to because now everyone is looking at it.
That's a great point.
And so, I mean, I'd highly encourage send that email and then take just one line out of that, post it on a social media and tag the right people in it. And enough of us do that or share it when we see other people doing it. I've learned that that's a PR nightmare. And then usually when it's a PR nightmare, things get done. My love is with Dr. Maggie. I met her briefly at CrimeCon as we were kind of going to and from places because she is a spitfire at CrimeCon. I don't think she sat down the whole time we were there. She was literally like eating food and walking as I think we were going to the 90s party where we were dressed ridiculous and met her briefly. But every person that I saw her talking to was either a victim's family or advocacy or, you know, talk author being there was probably huge for her trying to build a relationship there because they are sometimes the gold standard. They are the gold standard and they've helped solve so many crimes, but they need police to send them the DNA. They are not a law enforcement database.
Exactly.
They can't just get a warrant and grab that DNA. And so I can't imagine. I have children and pain can do so much to people, and to turn her pain into this work that has brought in people, someone to stand beside them in their darkest of times or help people get answers or find resources, and putting her own pain aside at the same time shows obviously why her daughter was the way that she was and the plans that she had. It seems like she took a lot after her mother.
Yeah. Beautifully said. Yeah. I couldn't agree more. Yeah, I really enjoyed talking with Dr. Maggie. And like I said, the audio you hear throughout this episode, I'll splice some of that interview in, the full interview, except for there's a couple things she told me to take out that she wanted off record. But so other than that, the full interview will be on Patreon. I am going to read a couple of Spotify comments I got this week. But before I do that, Sierra, I would love if you tell everybody about your show and where they can find you.
Okay, so I'm Sierra. I'm one of two people that are the host of the Unsolved Couple podcast. So what we do, one of the reasons I absolutely love your podcast is because in the same realm, I think weirdly that true crime and weird, creepy, mystical stuff have a beautiful crosshair with each other. So my husband and I recap episode by episode, case by case of the original Unsolved Mysteries. We call it the original gateway into true crime. Well, my husband's looking in my window right now. Speaking of him, he's a goofball. And then we give you the updates that you missed out on, you know, because back in the 90s when we watched it, we didn't find out how they ended. And actually, a lot of them have been solved because of Unsolved Mysteries. Mm-hmm. Again, it goes to show how important sharing these stories are, because you never know who's going to phone in that tip. And the secondary side of that is my husband is the biggest skeptic in the world and hates true crime. Oh. And I believe in everything. Like, I've shown him so many of your, I'm like, look what my friend said. Look what Kendra said, because she also agrees that dragons are just extinct. Like,
oh, he's not into like the paranormal stuff.
No.
I gotcha.
But then it creates a really fun back and forth, because I believe everything, he believes nothing, and yet we have a ton of fun. So that's our podcast in a nutshell. It's banter. It's a little bit more lighthearted and on some episodes when we get to talk about, like how you do, we get to talk about some of the fun things.
Right.
We are victim focused. We want to see these, you know, crime solved. We are very sad how many times we've seen something that was even potentially covered on a nationwide, and there hasn't been a single blurb about it since, hey, local story was an Unsolved Mysteries, and nothing's right. happened from those things. And so, yeah, we like getting to share these stories, and we would love to be put out of business as far as the true crime part and only talk about, you know, weird mystical stuff and things like that, because everything's been solved and people are kind to each other again. But yeah, you can find us anywhere you find your podcast, Unsolved Couple, and follow us on social media. We have a lot of fun over there, and yeah.
Love it. Thanks, Sierra.
Yeah, of course. Thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's read a couple Spotify comments. And I'm also just going to start reading like YouTube comments, Patreon comments, because I just want you guys to comment. It helps. And I want to hear what you guys think on Spotify and on YouTube. I know it helps with like algorithm stuff. So I love when you guys do that. So this was for, I'm on a little bit of a backlog. This was for my underwater UFO episode. So Luana V said, I loved this podcast for a long time now. It just keeps getting better. Alien emoji, heart emoji. Greetings from Brazil, where a lot of alien sightings are. That's spooky. Jesse C said, UFOs rule and you rule, Kadra. This episode's awesome. Keep up the good work. Love your shirt. Have a wonderful day as well. I had a Don't Talk to Strangers shirt on with my alien.
Unless they come from an alien ship, then you can talk to them.
Yeah. And then Alicia, my friend from Truly Twisted, commented on YouTube and said, another great episode, my girl, and even more of a reason for me not to enter the water. Agreed. So if you guys enjoyed today's episode and you want to spread the word, help get the word out for Brittany Phillips, for Maggie, share this story. Remember the spider effect. Five friends. Tell them to tell five friends. Drop some comments. Like, share, interact. It really helps so much. Go check out Unsolved Couple. And I think that's all of my calls to action. But you all are amazing. I hope you have a great week. Please stay safe. And I will talk to you next week. Bye. Perplexity, a Mystery podcast, is hosted, written, and produced by me, Kadra Brannon. The show is proud to be a part of the Black Cat Network. Editing is by myself and Charlie Leopold. Theme song by Patrick Thompson. If you want ad-free episodes and exclusive bonus content, you can always join the Perplexed Society at patreon.com/perplexitymysterypodcast. If you have a topic request or a listener story, you can always submit those to perplexitymysterypodcast@gmail.com. Business inquiries can be sent via email. Additional support links along with merch can be found in the episode description. Until next week, stay curious.
Your vehicle doesn't just get you from here to there. It's a bridge to the people and places that matter most. It's how you show up for your family, your community, and everyone else that depends on you. That's why for 125 years, Firestone has been building tires with one thing in mind: to deliver products that are as reliable as you are. Firestone, always dependable since 1900.
Got stubborn spots, unwanted hair, or uneven skin? The CAPS Laser Center offers advanced solutions. They offer a full range of advanced laser treatments like Halo and Moxie that help reveal smoother, clearer, healthier-looking skin. CAPS is one of the top providers in the world for laser treatments, and their expert team delivers personalized care every step of the way. When you book your first Laser Center appointment, you'll get a $50 CAPS MedSpa gift card. So don't wait. Book today at experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.